Before we begin this podcast, I would like to give a shout out to all of our patrons on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. You can find the link in the description. I would like to give a particular shout out to our BBF, BFF level patrons, Delia, Elizabeth O, Miranda E, Guadalupe F, and Chrissy G. Y'all are so real for supporting us so hard. And if you want to support us, we can't do this podcast without our Patreon supporters. So visit patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. This episode of Bitter Brown Femmes is a live recording done virtually for Cal State Monterey Bay. I would like to give my sincere thank you once again to all of the student organizers who advocated for us to speak at your campus, even if it was just virtually, especially all the folks at the Otter Cross Cultural Center and the Entertainment Alliance. Y'all are so freaking real. If you would like to bring us to your campus virtually this year, feel free to reach out to us at bitterbrownfemspodcast.com/bookings. Again, that's bitterbrownfempodcast.com/bookings to get us to come to your school. All right, y'all, let's start the show.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
Do you want me to
Are you going to be fucking late to a virtual event? I was like...
Wow, really, bitch? I'm a mother.
Oh my God, where your child at?
Down the street. He's down the street.
Es un callejero. He's a street fighter.
Yeah. He's hanging out the cats.
Oh my God.
Where do you want me to shoes? Put my headphones on?
I mean, we have to record, so that would probably be like ideal, right? No?
Welcome. Happy Wednesday. My name is Bianca Zamora. I use she and her pronouns. The Otter Cross Cultural Center under the Otter Student Union is excited to welcome Bitter Brown Femmes podcast. This event was supported by a California State University Entertainment Alliance grant, and today's podcast will be recorded and available through the Bitter Brown Femmes platform. Please feel be comfortable to write in questions and responses in the Q&A, as we will have time later for a question and answer portion.
Hi everyone, I'm Yasmin. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm the Community Arts Student Coordinator for the OC3. Bitter Brown Femmes is a podcast hosted by Ruben and Cassandra that tackles social, political, emotional, and community issues. It was born of a necessity to take the Latinx Chicanx community dialogue beyond mere identity empowerment and feel-good comedic fluff that, although have their place, oversaturate social media and into a realm that is critical of identity and society while advocating for marginalized peoples. We also aim to disrupt liberal complacency and systems of oppression by living up to our motto of dismantling shit while talking shit. Please welcome Bitter Brown Femmes.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. This is Ruben. Who are you, Cassandra?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool, cool.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm okay. How are you?
And this is Cassandra, and she's coming in from El Paso, and I'm in LA. So, yeah, this is usually how the podcast is recorded. We're usually, you know, FaceTiming or Skyping or Google chatting. Sometimes, I think once we Zoomed. But overall, like, recording this podcast through the pandemic has been the same process, except for with like a million more stressors. But yeah, if you don't know us, we are a social, political, and cultural podcast that focuses on tackling issues that affect marginalized people with an emphasis on queer and trans people of color, particularly Latinxes.
So we are kicking off Latinx Heritage Month, which started yesterday, right?
Yes.
Yesterday. Okay. I don't even know what to say about Latinx Heritage Month. It's such a weird, well, I guess it's not that weird when you think about like the country's independence and how it lines up or it's supposed to, but it's just like weird because it's not like 1 month. It's like in the middle of 2 months. But anyway, I don't even know where to begin with Latinx Heritage Month with all the shit that happened that came out yesterday.
Yeah, it's like difficult to be celebratory.
Yeah.
On top of the, like, all the bullshit that already is Latinx Heritage Month, right? Like, it often just feels like a month where the world remembers that Latinxes exist, and so it wants to market them. Or it wants to finally remember that, you know, they're artists that they need a paycheck.
That's when, like, iTunes features us on their Latinx podcasts once a year for a day.
Yeah, Stitcher actually reached out to us yesterday and was like,
"Who?
Stitcher? They're like one of like
Stitcher, yeah.
Like you have been featured on like top 10 like Latinx podcasts. Please share this on your platforms." And I'm like, but the only people who have ever like featured us like outside of like Latinx lists is BuzzFeed. Like when we first started, and that was because a Latina writer was like advocating for us, right? So it's usually just like us uplifting each other up, which is like, what's new, right?
True.
But if you feel like this time is joyous for you, like, don't let me steal your shine, sunshine, or whatever Barbara Streisand said. Don't let me rain on your parade. That's your business. Yeah, where do you even start? Like, I mean, we should have started by introducing ourselves to Despacito, like Joe Biden did.
I thought we were, yeah. We
Girl, missed that's that. Copyright infringement. We already do enough of that.
So, where was he at that he did this?
I think Arizona. No, I don't even know. I want to say Florida.
No, but like, what was the, was it like a...
Was it a Latinx
event? A rally or...
I think he was going to like kick off like Latinx Heritage Month. Because I think Luis Fonsi introduced him.
There was other Latinx artists there. So maybe it was a Latinx event.
Which is like...
Because Trump just had one like last week in Arizona.
Yeah.
And there was all these fucking beaners there. That's what I call them. I'm sorry. Beaners for Trump. And one of them, one of the ladies told him that she would die for him.
Oh.
Yeah. But yesterday, if you missed it, Biden was at what I'm assuming is the Latinx event. I don't know where he was at, but he like came out to Despacito. You know.
He played it off his phone, which is even how
he played it off like, his phone.
More rascuache. Like, girl, like pay your like PA system or whatever. Like,
yeah, where's he didn't the even production? Like walk out to it with like a PA. It was just like he walked up to the mic and then he like was looking for it on his phone and then he played it and it was really awkward because he wasn't doing anything. He was just like smiling at his phone. But that's what I feel like all these politicians and like brands think like Latinx Heritage Month is like. Or I just like in Biden's case, like we've been talking about this for like the past months, but it's like. He hasn't said shit. Every time he talks, he just, like, says, like, the worst shit. But, like, even at an event where you're trying to reach, like, Latinx voters, like, you can't even do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, let me play Despacito. And, like, I can't.
Instead of, like, tackling substantial issues. Instead of talking
about, like, immigration or what's going on, you know, what's happening in ICE, or like literally fucking anything.
Two of the most pressing issues for Latinxes right now are healthcare. We are the most uninsured group in the nation, right? So
and he doesn't, he's not for Medicare for all, so.
Yeah, and you know, immigration, like so many of us saw family members, friends, community members be deported or held in detention during the Obama years, right, which continued right now. So a lot of us are looking, like even the folks who have good faith in him, right, are still looking for Biden to address that past and how he's going to fix that history of violence. But instead all we get is these, you know, basic tortilla commercials, right? Like,
that's oh my God, do you remember when Hillary Clinton was like everyone's abuelita?
Oh God. Yeah, somebody was like, who is this Despacito intro even for? And I'm like, for the people who bought Hillary is my abuelita merch. and we're saying all this, and it matters because they had 4 years to learn how to fix their approach to reaching a Latinx voting pool, but they didn't pay attention to us because they didn't think we mattered in the long run. But now we're seeing, particularly in Florida, that it's coming down to that state, right? Whether or not they get Latinxes on board, right? And in 2016, 30% of Latinxes voted for Trump, right? And we're going to have a discussion about y'all's racist asses too in a minute. But
getting dragged.
Yeah, but like, and but the thing that's even worse right now is that that number is like, that margin is more people are, more Latinx that are voting for Trump this time around, right? And a part of it is that already Trump appeals to a lot of racist Latinx's like instinct to want to, you know, attack immigrants, to attack Black people, you know, non-Latinx, non-Black Latinx folks, you know, who carry all this anti-Blackness, side with Trump on a lot of things, right? And there's also this urge for a lot of us, particular non-Black Latinxes, to want to assimilate. And being part of this like very nationalistic, violent, white supremacist monster that is Trump, right, really appeals to that sect of our community, which is growing and growing.
Yeah, it was like, you know, we talked about this on our last episode. I don't know if we're going to get into this now, but just like, if, you know, I don't know how many of you here actually, I'm sure a lot of you listen or know, at least know who we are. That's why you're here. But I don't know how many actually listened to our last episode. We're talking about like everything electoral. And one of the things we were talking about was like liberals blaming like non-voters or third party voters, you know, for Trump being elected, and they're going to blame, they're like blaming us for like the support that Trump has again. And one of the things we had said was, obviously if you're white, you need to shut the fuck up. You don't need to be telling anybody nothing about voting because you bitches elected him. But in regards to like the Latinx community, specifically the non-Black Latinx community, like instead of harassing leftists online, like are you actually talking to like, you know, your tios and tias and like family that voted for Trump? Because I know that we all either know them or they're in our family. And I know like personally, like they're in my family, right? Because a lot of Latinx did vote for Trump in 2016, and they're, it's like even those numbers seem bigger now, and there's like a reason for that. And so it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like this thing that I see online where people are like, we don't claim them, like kind of like out of sight, out of mind, instead of like examining the reasons why so many non-Black Latinx are voting for Trump and why they're so drawn to him. And then within that conversation, it's always, from what I see, if they even like get into talking about it, it's very like, oh, it's like internalized racism and like internalized hatred, and they're just trying to be white. And like some of that is, there's like truth in that, obviously, on top of like wanting to assimilate, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, we got to be accountable for our bullshit, because it's not just like, oh, like we're internal, like we internalized racism, you know, and we want to be white. A lot of those bitches are white, first of all, but not all of them are white, you know. I'm like going everywhere. It's just like, I see like this whole thing where people are like, oh, it's just like the white Latinxes. And
it's,
I'm like,
the
no,
white Cubans.
Like,
it's just,
the white Cubans. Like, yes, obviously. A lot of like these pictures that I see of like Latinos for Trump is like a lot of white Latinxes. Yes. But then you see like the brown ones in there, you know what I mean? And then like, so it's not just white Latinxes, it's like non-Black Latinxes that maybe they do want to be white, right? But it's not just that, it's just that they're anti-Black, that they're like pro like capitalism, because they make like, you know, all of a sudden they have like a
middle
good job and they're like educated Latinas and shit, and then they like, they want a piece of that, right? So it's like, yes, all of these things matter, like assimilation, internalized racism, so on and so forth. But I feel like it's like a cop-out, I feel, in those conversations, where it's like, you don't actually want to talk about how we're all fucking anti-Black. And that, and, you know, anti-Blackness and white supremacy are like, they go hand in hand. So how are you, like, how are we not addressing that? And when we want to talk about anti-Blackness, it's always like, we don't claim them. Like, it's cool. Like, we don't claim them. They're not one of us.
Yeah. And I think a big part of the "we don't claim them" narrative is this need to distance ourselves from not only those people, like specifically, but those people because they represent the unchallenged anti-blackness that we have inside of us, right? Like, because we haven't been doing the internal work to challenge all the bigotry that we embody, whether conscious or unconscious, right? Because we don't want to do that work with ourselves, we don't want to put in the work to challenge our family members and to claim them as part of the dark underbelly of Latinidad, right? Because so much of Latinidad was built on white supremacy, right? So that also cannot be understated, right? Like, a lot of our families are coming from like countries that are also white supremacists, just because they speak Spanish or Portuguese, or, you know, Belize, they speak English. Just because they speak these other languages doesn't mean that white supremacy didn't like infect them. Like, it very much did, right? And you don't just unlearn that because suddenly you enter a state that doesn't speak your first language, right? Even my mother, who's like, you know, a brown woman, right? Who's like a deep shade of brown. Like, she still has a lot of like white supremacist thoughts that I constantly have to challenge, right? And so, like, she's not unique in this, right? So many of our family members come with that mentality, right? And sometimes it is blatant anti-blackness, right? And sometimes it's blatant anti-indigenous, indigeneity, right? Like, we are so used to hearing it sometimes that we don't catch it, right? Like, when we hear things like mejorar la raza, which is mean to marry somebody who's lighter skinned, when our family says some things like no seas indio, right? Which is like, don't act indigenous, right? Shit like that we do not check on a daily basis accumulates. And when you realize, and we translate that to English, you realize that's the same shit white supremacists are saying, right? But because, you know, oh, that's just my, you know, mi tata or whatever, like, suddenly we can't challenge them. But we're very brave when it comes to telling white people what to do, but when it comes to our own households, we're not cleaning house. And that's something that we need to continue to do, and something that's our inability or our unwillingness to do so for the last few years has manifested. It's part of this manifestation of more Latinx voters backing Trump, right? And so, yeah, welcome to Biddle Brown Fams. 15 minutes in, where are we? We already got like 3 Q&As, y'all. We're not answering that till the end. And also, like, something that's important to talk about is that, like, we are critiquing Joe Biden, right? Because we understand, and we've talked about this in our last episode too, we understand this, like, rhetoric of lesser evil, right? But you still gotta critique that lesser evil because it's still evil, right? So if we can't do it now, y'all are definitely not gonna let us do it later, because we had 8 years of Obama and we dealt with the same shit, like, of when we criticized him, y'all drowned us out, leftists and, like, and other
and
folks.
Still do.
Yeah.
Even like if you talk about Obama today.
Yeah.
Like, they're still on that shit. So,
and it's like, how do you want us to progress if we're not learning from the mistakes, right? And right now we have literally the person who made all those mistakes, who was part of those mistakes for 8 years, looking to continue his legacy of neoliberalism, and that needs to be taken up to task.
Yeah. I don't know. So, like, we're like talking about all these points that we talked about again in we just released a new episode yesterday. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about like the one before, which was all about electoral politics. So if you haven't listened to it, we recommend that you do, because we don't want to like have that whole episode again right now. But yeah, I don't know if you want to get into some heavy stuff now.
Yeah, we are going to.
That was kind of heavy. I mean, not really. I mean, kind of.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about the ICE detention centers and what's going on right now with the ongoing genocide, right?
Yeah, so just like a heads up, like a trigger warning, because we know like that it's It's a heavy. It's heavy even reading about it. So, and this just broke. Was it yesterday or the day before? I want to say it was Monday
morning. Was it Monday?
I think it was Monday morning. Regardless, it took a while for me to even kind of process it because it's so violent and it's fucking genocide, fucking
for
eugenics.
Folks who don't know,
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Did you want to explain it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So for those who don't know, or just so we're all on the same page. So I believe it was Monday actually that a whistleblower, who happens to be a Black woman who is a nurse at an ICE detention facility in Georgia, kind of came out and said that they were performing, well, pretty much forced sterilizations on women there in detention for without their consent, without their knowledge. And it's violent, like I said, but it's not surprising, as in it's not shocking, given the U.S.'s history with just white supremacy in general, but specifically with involuntary sterilizations of not just of particularly women of color. But that also has included many, many other just people in general, right? So
lesbians, gays as well.
Yeah. So I had posted a thread about, and that's just some of the, we cannot even begin to uncover, there was just so many horrific stories that I was reading because I did want to post about some of the, some of the history of forced sterilizations in the US. And some of it was just I couldn't even post it because it's heavy. But initially, with eugenics in the US, it started primarily, it's rooted in ableism because that's kind of where it started. And the case in 1927, and I think it was Buck versus Bell, if I'm not mistaken, I'm sorry for that. That was in 1927. And that was for a mother of a disabled girl to get her sterilized because she was disabled. And once they allowed that and said it didn't violate the 14th Amendment, and 32 states kind of were okay, let's all do it. And so it kind of made way for, first it was poor people, and then they moved on because poor white women were also a part of this. And then it became more racialized. So then it became Black women, Native American women, but also men. I know this is one thing that I wanted to touch on was the gender-based violence, because it is primarily women, but men were also sterilized as well, and mostly men of color, Black men, Latino men as well, and children, I think the youngest one that I saw was 9 years old. And a lot of a lot of these people also overlap. Some of them were Black disabled people. A lot of them were poor brown. There's cases of specifically in Puerto Rico with Puerto Rican women. There was the case of in LA with primarily Mexican immigrant women. So there's just been so much with so many groups that it's just it's not fucking shocking that they're still doing this, because even after it was quote unquote made illegal, or they outlawed, whatever you want to call it, the eugenics programs, they're still doing it to incarcerated people in prison, which is people that other people don't necessarily care about, first of all. And so it's not surprising that they're also doing it in detention. And I wouldn't be surprised if obviously they've done it before. And this is just the first time that there's, that a whistleblower has came out and said this. But it's also just very infuriating to me that there's not much, Biden hasn't said shit about this. The only politician that I've seen say anything on Twitter was AOC and Rashida maybe.
And Ilhan,
which are the ones that kind of really the only ones that would say something to begin with. But I don't feel people are talking about it enough. It's infuriating because I don't feel the media is really, they're kind of just making this even with with everything that ICE does, starting with children, you know, when everyone was kids in cages, and it's you're not angry enough for me is what I feel like. I don't feel like people are angry enough or like angry enough to do something. Like their solution to this would be to vote in November.
It's because they're saving all, like, yeah, they're saving all their anger for November 3rd or 4th, right?
They're like,
when the voting,
because that happened like in Kids in Cages, and that was like, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago. There was like, when protests were happening outside of El Paso, and like one of the main things was like, on November 3rd in 2020, we're going to vote. And that was like 3 years ago. So what the fuck were you doing for those 3 years? You know what I mean? And it's just like, voting is not going to save these women. If I'm using the word safe, even like correctly here, like it's not going to make detention go away. Like if anything, Biden's going to come out, if he were to win, which I highly doubt it, he would come out and be like, oh, you know, now families are going to be together in cages, just like you all wanted, because and people are going to be like, yes, like, thank you so much.
Yes. And so what needs to happen here, one of the important things is that our language needs to shift, right? From like, you know, make your voices heard, like vote, like that, as we've mentioned, has its what, benefits, right? Like, you know, on a local scale, right? But also we need to push people's mentalities forward, right? Like, we should be at the point where we want to abolish ICE because of all these harms, right? And one of the reasons you're not seeing as many mainstream news sources, right? Because a lot of the times right now you're getting this news about the hysterectomies through Democracy Now!, through like, you know, the more independent sites, those are the ones that are providing more analysis, right? What we need to do is push, keep applying pressure, right? Ringing the alarm about these issues so that they reach a mainstream, right? So that actually pushes mentalities forward, right? But I also try not to be pessimistic, but the pessimistic side of me is like, we literally saw children in cages, you know, 3 years ago, right? Who, by the way, have been in detention, you know, that wasn't new at that point, right? Detention centers had been going for a decade at this plus at this point, right? Like, because of George Bush and then Obama. So part of me is like, what is it going to take for everybody to get on the same fucking page about like, we need to abolish ICE. Like ICE needs to not be something that we accept as a given, and something that is state funded, right? Like our tax dollars are paying for this. So I don't know where the Republicans here that are, or the libertarians who are like, I am fiscally conservative or whatever, like, bitch, be fiscally conservative about the fact that your money's going to ICE, right? Like, so a lot of this is like, sure, vote, but your activism can end there, right? So one of the important things you need to do is reach out to immigrant orgs that are currently working to get people out of there, to provide, or to mutual aid groups that are providing for folks to get here safely, right? Those are things that you can actively do, right? And of course, you can always protest. That also has an important part of this. But protest with folks who have been doing the work, right? So a part of that is connecting with folks who are centered around immigrant work. Like if you're in LA, right, there's Carecen, there's TPS Alliance, there's which by the way, TPS was just revoked, right? Which TPS, if you're not familiar with it, gave sanctuary to very many different marginalized groups that were affected by things like war. And so that included a lot of Central America, Haiti, I believe, and other parts of the world as well. So all of these orgs, I keep mentioning them because they're equipped to continue the work. A lot of the times they just lack people power, right? So that is why it's important to organize with them.
And that's like a thing where like liberals, also conservatives, but like liberals co-opt like groundwork that's being done. So for example, like when Kids in Cages was happening, all these like suburban moms, like Facebook moms, or not even just moms, just people were like, oh my God, I'm so upset. Like I'm gonna go on Facebook and start this protest. And you know, they go on Facebook and they're like, let's go protest these Kids in Cages. And they don't have the language to do that. And that's why we ended up with like keep families together versus abolish fucking ICE. You know what I mean? Like, that's why we end up with like some watered down version of the
defund
work.
Defund the police.
Defund the police versus like what like abolish. Black people specifically have been saying is abolish, right? And so like that's literally, that's kind of like what happened. So like if people were to actually connect with like people doing groundwork centered around immigration, then they would just be able to add on to the work and kind of take their lead, and they already know what they're doing. Like they already know what like the goal should be, versus like, again, people that like right now, like it's not even like that mainstream right now, but let's say this story does get bigger, we're going to see a lot of those protests again where people are going to go like, it's probably going to become some white feminist shit. Like, I don't know. It's going to become something like where it's like, a women's march shit. Like right now is a good time to bring up that Bernie tweet, actually, because that's where I'm headed. Like it's gonna.
Oh God.
Do you want to read it or me?
Bernie Sanders's team.
So not Bernie Sanders. It's like
not Bernie Sanders proper. The People for Bernie account tweeted
on Twitter
yesterday when the news about the hysterectomies, you know, hit the leftist news source. They tweeted that our system is so inherently patriarchal that they didn't think to perform safe and largely reversible vasectomies. Like these people's thought process was like, you know, more like less patriarchal genocide, not like, hey, genocide is fucking bad. Let's quit this shit. Like, let's abolish ICE.
And it was a white woman who tweeted this. Because she followed up. So it was a white woman who tweeted this, which isn't surprising to me, because she's like blame, like, yes, it's patriarchal. Our system is so inherently patriarchal that they didn't think, you know, instead of forced sterilization on women, they should have just like done reversible vasectomies on brown men instead. Fuck? Like, why would you fucking tweet that? And it like, And that's what I mean. Like, that's such a white feminist thing, like a liberal thing, but such a white feminist thing to say, like, yeah, this is so like, fuck patriarchy. Let's do it to men. And as a white woman saying that about like, particularly black and brown men who are detained in ICE is like fucking racist as shit too. So they tweeted that and now it's like tweets not loading, of course.
and it's
but
like
then she tweeted afterwards and she's like, wasn't suggesting they do vasectomies, was pointing out the patriarchy. I'm teaching. The tweet is deleted. I hope you're not teaching anybody. Like,
and it's like this, like,
means by that, but
it's like this one track mind of like, as women, right? Without like noting that like these are immigrant brown women, immigrant black women in detention centers. Like it's like, but it's this one track mind of white that comes from white feminism, right, of non-intersectional feminism, right, which only sees like, oh, they shouldn't have you know, sterilized these women, instead of contextualizing like they are being sterilized because they're immigrant brown women, immigrant black women in detention. They shouldn't be in that position to begin with. But so instead of like looking at the bigger picture, they are focusing on this one issue that they understand, right? This issue of womanhood, as opposed to this issue of like, what does womanhood even mean to someone in detention? You know, what does it mean to someone who isn't considered a person in the United States, but that is not a visible problem to them. So that is not something that they're attacking, right? And so and it connects to your point of you know, I don't know if the right term is like whitewashing or like you know, defanging these movements of like, you know, like when the kids being detained in cages made the news, it was like, why are they being separated from their families? Not
versus
like
why are they there, period. Like all families should be, because they're like, let our children go. And then that's the whole conversation of them calling them our children. But it was like, let all of them go. Like, yeah, I understand. Like for me, you all know, especially me, like I would understand an emphasis on children, obviously. But it's like, all of them need to go. Like they don't need to be there at all, you know? But going back to what I was saying is like, yeah, down the line, like they already tried it with that Bernie tweet. So like, if, like I said, like if this were to go like mainstream and there were protests, like I wouldn't be surprised, like if white feminists were out there again with like pussy hats somehow, and saying like, we want all ICE detention guards to be women. Like that would be like, because they already do that now, you know, they're like, let's replace all cops with women.
Well, or, they like, already are saying that, like, if cops,
they've already said that, yeah, like, yeah, prison, no, like, we need prison female guards, like, or, instead or the, of, like, we don't need prisons at all.
Or the popular one is, like, police forces should reflect the community. What, so another brown queer can shoot me? Like, what? Like, but the thing is that, like, it comes from this incapacity to see beyond the oppression, right? When all you know is systems of oppression, then you only know to replicate them, right? And this is when, like, reading and educating and maybe not even reading, like, engaging your communities who are doing activism, like, comes into play. Once you are engaging with folks who are doing the work and you're engaging with readings that are imagining a better world, then it'll expand your capacity to imagine a world without oppression, right? And sometimes folks hear things like that and I think that's a pipe dream, but it's like, first of all, like, I would rather live in a, like, have a dream than live in this nightmare, like, straight up. And I know that's like some cheap lyricism, but that's what just came out of my mouth, and you're gonna handle that.
It's an MCR lyric, I feel.
TBH, write it down, Gerard Way. I know you're watching.
No, yeah, for sure. And it also reminds me of, like, as I was, you know, revisiting, like, all these cases in regards to sterilization in the U.S., as I had mentioned, you know, back in, like, 1975 when they brought a lawsuit against, what was it, like, Los Angeles County, USC, I believe, where they were doing forced sterilization on, like, primarily Mexican immigrant women who only spoke Spanish, right? And so they would sign these papers not knowing what they were signing, or a lot of them didn't even sign anything. And the lawsuit was like 10 of them. I'm sure there was like more because it spanned over like a decade. And unfortunately, like, they lost that case because the judge said that it was just a miscommunication between patients and doctors, and said that, you know, these Mexican women essentially like regretted themselves wanting to get sterilized because they apparently Mexican immigrant women just what did he say, they see their worth tied to like having children or some racist bullshit like that. But regardless of the fact that they lost that case, was still like a big thing, specifically in like Mexican American community. But at that time, like, the Chicano movement was really taking off, and it was like a very defining moment which Chicana feminists like kind of had to step away from the Chicana movement, and also step away, which I don't really want to say that they were particularly part of like the mainstream white feminist movement, but they tried to, like, you know, Chicana feminists try to kind of get white feminists on their side, or like trying to connect with them, because this is like a fucking issue that white women should care about. But again, white women at that time, and always, I guess, not, so, like, let me break this down.
This is in the late 70s for folks.
Yeah, this is, like, in the 70s, so, like, reproductive justice, especially within white feminists, has always, like, been centered around abortion, and white women not wanting to be mothers, and, like, you know, patriarchy, and they were kind of, like, we want sterilization on demand, because they couldn't have that. A lot of white women, like, they weren't able to get that, right? And then, like, on the other hand, like, brown and black women were being forcefully sterilized, and their right to, like, motherhood was being taken away. And white feminists didn't really care about that, one, because they're white women, they don't really, like, they still, like, even today, like, they can't really connect with women of color and our issues as much as they, like, want to, or, like, say that they do. Like, they're still never, you know, as we were talking right now with the Bernie tweet, but it was also, like, it was just something that they didn't see, like, they're, like, they just couldn't connect to Chicana feminists, or, like, their issues on, like, forced sterilization. And then, like, the men in the Chicana movement
also didn't give a shit. I mean, straight up, they were kind of like, okay, like, you know, like a lot of like cishet Chicano men, like, how does that relate to La Raza? You know, like, if it's not about police brutality or something affecting brown men directly, like, they don't give a shit. And that's still the same today. So, and if you watch the documentary, No Más Bebés, there's like a whole breakdown of that, of like that Chicana feminist, and also just, you should watch it. But yeah, it reminds me of like, just like how the reproductive justice conversations and like discourse and like movement has kind of really always been like centered around white feminists and like abortion primarily. And yes, you know, obviously we all, I think we all, me and Ruben agree that everyone should be able to have an abortion or have access to an abortion, and not for whatever fucking reason, right? But there's hardly like talk about reproductive justice as far as like us, as particularly women of color, wanting to have children and like being able to have children.
And for, and trans, like, too, right?
And like, trans folks as well, not just like women, right? Like, that we should all be able to have like children, and not, and then it doesn't even like extend to just like giving birth, because then we get to like, okay, like giving birth, and then we can go talk about like medical negligence that primarily affects like Black women in this country, but also like people of color as well who give birth. And then from there, it's like also just like parenthood afterwards, right? Because I feel like it's also not just like being able to have a child, giving birth without dying, and like your baby not dying. It's also like, as a mother, as a parent, like I should be able to raise my child in an environment where like he is safe, where they are like able to go to a school where it's not like toxic, right? And we're like dealing with environmental racism, or like without thinking that my child is going to be like gunned down by police, without, you know, my child not being able to access like education as a like disabled child, right? Like reproductive justice kind of like extends further than just like step one. it's just like there's just like a whole bigger conversation that I think should be talked about more, versus just like abortion. And that's always been like a, when we're talking about like that case particularly that happened in the 70s that I was just talking about with Mexican women, and because of like the ties to the Chicana feminism, like has always resonated with me, because it's also like, you know, as Mexican women, as Latinas, like we're always kind of like, and not just like Mexican women, Latinas, also like Black women as well, like it's kind of like we are, if we have a lot of children, like it's a problem, right? It's not just like everything that I just talked about. It's just like, if I want to have 5 children, that's like a problem, right? And like, I should, there's like, you know, we're talking about eugenics in the United States, but it's like, it's just a lot of people have these sentiments, like on Twitter, like people are always like, if you don't have money to have a child, like don't have a child, like poor people shouldn't have children, and they think that's okay to say. And it's not at all.
Or like the onus of like overpopulation is always put on, like,
yeah, the overpopulation bullshit. But it's just like, like everyone should be able to like have children if they want to have children, or not have children if they don't want to have children. But it's like, because I'm not having this, you know, if I'm not having a white child, then. But also another thing I've been thinking about, because like I'm also, you know, people are like, where are the pro-lifers in this conversation, right? And that's interesting, because I mean, we all know they're hypocrites and they don't give a shit because they're racist. But it is interesting to me that they want to police your body. Like they want to be able to tell you like that you can't have an abortion, but then they also want to take it away from you at the same time. You know what I mean? Like they also want to, they're also like pro sterilization of like women of color. And then at the same time, they'll turn around and be like, you can't have this abortion because your baby matters to me. So like, I don't.
Well, it's the matter of like, you know, when it comes to abortion and women of color, they want to disallow you from having that from having that choice, right? In order to control other choices in your life further down the line, right? And then when it comes to sterilization, right? Like it's like this duality of like not wanting us to have choices. Like, well, it's not even a duality. It's like it comes down to like not giving us choices, right? As people of color, right? We don't get to make the choices of whether or not we want to start a family or not, right? Like that's part of like the white supremacist model of the United States, because it ultimately boils down to dehumanizing us, right? When they take away the things we can or can't do, it dehumanizes us further, right? In a world that already denies us humanity, right? Yeah. But this conversation also ties into how femicides, right, are rampant in Mexico, right? And a lot of the times it's just like mujeres, women, trans folks, non-binary folks, queer folks doing the work of combating gendered violence, as we are currently seeing in Juarez, right?
Juarez, and also like I think right now in Ciudad de Mexico, where we saw them, I think it was like last week or a week and a half ago, a group took over like the Human Rights Commission building. And that was very powerful, because it was kind of like, y'all are doing shit for us. So like, we're going to take over and like, we'll do it for ourselves. Right. Because that's kind of like how it's always been anyway. We kind of like have to take care of each other. And so they were there for about, I want to say, less than a week. And then eventually they got, forcibly removed by the police there. But that's just like one of the things that's just like the most recent. But, women, queer folks, trans folks in like Mexico are always like throwing shit down, like against patriarchy, against machismo, against like gender-based violence, against sexual assault. Like, that's just like their reality every day. And Mexico just does not give a shit. men everywhere kind of don't give a shit, but like in Mexico, they really don't care about women or violence there at all. So with like the sterilization that are happening in ICE detention, like it is racism, it is eugenics, it's genocide, but it's also like, gender-based violence that happens obviously everywhere, not just in detentions. It happens like we're seeing, in Mexico. And I mean, obviously I don't live in Mexico. So like I can talk and share like what they're doing and like try to get attention, and we can like stand in solidarity with them, but at the end of the day we don't live there, so it's kind of like we talk about where what we know, and we also know like violence here, it doesn't look the same necessarily, but it still exists here. And a lot of the ideas of like machismo in Mexico like come here within the Latinx community and our culture and like our families and like our ideas. And I don't know where I was going with that. It's just like thinking about Latinx Heritage Month, and it's just like, cause yesterday was like Mexico's Independence Day, and a lot of like the feminists that I follow over there, they had a lot of, protests, when people were doing El Grito, they were like lighting shit on fire. They were like, how are we going to celebrate Independence Day when you all like murder women here every day and don't give a shit? And I mean, on top of that, it's like, how are you going to celebrate Independence Day when it's like a settler state? And that's the same, like the conversations we have here around the 4th of July. Like, how are we, how are we supposed to like be like, oh yeah, USA, so great.
That's And that's when like, I know I'm going to get the boot, because like, that's a lot of my hesitation with Latinx Heritage Month. Like I mentioned earlier that, yeah, this is one of the times of the year where, like, unfortunately, publications, orgs, whatever, like, remember that Latinxes exist and have certainly have funding to hire us and stuff like that. But also, I have, so that's a little resentment I have because the rest of the year, a lot of Latinx artists and creators are like scrambling, right? But the other hesitation I have, that, and that ties to your point, is that a lot of us are, with Latinx Heritage Month and with the Independence Days that fall in that month, September 15 to October 15, a lot of us is celebrating settler colonialism, right? Like, just different embodiments of it. And I think that's something that's very hard for U.S. Latinxes to wrestle with, right? It's not hard for people in those respective Latinx countries, right? Because, you know, like you mentioned, and like I know people who are living in you know, in Mexico, in Central America and so forth, who criticize their own governments, right? About like, what Independence Day? The same arguments we have about 4th of July, they have about their places, right? What are we celebrating? What Independence Day? Who's independence, right? When in Mexico, you know, Black people weren't even recognized until about 5 years ago, right? And Indigenous people are still being murdered to this day, right? Like, who's independence, right? But that's sometimes difficult for U.S. Latinxes to grasp because a lot of us only understand our national identity as one that is being oppressed, right? Particularly in the U.S. And so another important thing for us to do moving forward is to develop an international perspective of our politics, right? Like we mentioned at the start, yes, you know, vote if you need to, get involved in local politics if you need to, but also have a wider perspective about the international goings, right? Particularly maybe and we can start somewhere easy, like where your culture is from, right? Like familiarize yourself with those politics and see where the leftists are in your particular states, right? Like, what are they saying about things like Independence Day? What are they saying about things like Viva Mexico, right? Because a lot of times you'll find that you're celebrating something that radical folks, leftist folks in your particular nation of your parents' origin, like, that they are not about, right? That they are condemning. So but in order for a more progressive front on all, for us to be more progressive on all fronts, we have to look at perspectives outside of just the U.S. And that's what some folks would call like, being an internationalist, having an internationalist perspective.
Yeah, and then it would be easier for you all to understand imperialism. And like why voting like for liberal candidates is like sometimes not lesser, you know, the lesser of the two, because, you know, when we're talking about like Hillary Clinton, Obama, Biden, for example, they're not the only ones, obviously, but it's like you in the US, like you're okay, right? You're okay with like their politics because their politics are bombing people overseas and their politics are like, you know, getting environmentalists killed in Honduras, right? Like we're talking about like Berta Cáceres, like a lot of like the violence happens outside of the US and a lot of us like don't know about it or like don't care because we're like, oh, it's not happening in the US, it's not happening in me. And so we do need like a better framework of like what is happening outside of the US. Not just with like, yes, with Latin America, obviously if you're like a Latinx person, like I would hope that you start with Latin America. And then, but it's also not just like Latin America, it's also like, you know, in solidarity with like Palestine, with like the countries in the Middle East, like everywhere, because it's not just about like getting liberation in the US, it should be about everyone getting liberation, right? Everyone's like, across the world is like fighting capitalism, is fighting oppression in one way or another. And so to kind of just be stuck in the US, like, oh, well, I'm gonna vote for this person because, you know, they're not fucking me up. And you don't give a shit like what they're doing outside of the US, like that's a problem. So like with Trump, it's mostly like he's kept his bullshit here. And that's also like one of the reasons people, especially white people, are reacting to it, because it's the first time that they kind of have to like see this uncomfortableness and they don't fucking like it. Whereas like with other, like, you know, presidents, it's kind of been like out of sight, out of mind, like with Obama, for example, who like he's like the drone person, and like no one, again, like no one really cared because it didn't happen in the US. Like, you know, also when we talk about like the military, because I don't even want to talk about like the Vanessa Guillen thing, because I saw an update on that and like some law that they're trying to pass, right, in her name.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, like that should have just been like, abolish the fucking military. As like fucking radical as you think that sounds, like what is the military doing overseas to other women as well, and like children and other people of color? So like, how are you going to support that system just because it doesn't affect you directly?
One of my favorite tweets is like talking about how, like, you know, how is the military defending our liberties overseas? Like, how did they get over there?
En los manda.
But that was a good tie-in of like how, in order for us to engage electoral politics with a clear mind, we need to engage internationally, right? So that was really good. I don't think I would have gone in there on my own. So thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, when we, and a lot of the times you might not get international news, or that might not be available to you immediately, right? And that's why there's things like Twitter and Instagram where you can find radicals who are, you know, all over the world, right? And see what they're saying, right? And that is part of like using chisme as like a tool of resistance, right? Like something that, like a concept that I've popularized, right? And a tool of survival, right? Because we can't always rely on the mainstream channels for radical news and help in organizing, then we have to rely on each other and our word of mouth and trust one another in order to build, right? Not only locally, but internationally. Yeah.
Yes. And like, just to add, I know we didn't want to have this conversation, but it's like also for the fucking, I don't know what to call them, like the homophobe, transphobe, Latinxes who are like, stop neutralizing our language and what does, you know, that bullshit. Like, if you actually interacted with leftists and like literally feminists in Mexico or like in Latin America, you'll know that they all use like gender neutral, like Spanish words, first of all.
And it gets,
and that just tells me that you don't actually talk to any of them except for like your fucking family members and other academics when you put out these fucking articles about how no one uses the Latin, like Latinx. Yeah. No, bitch, you don't use it. Like, bigots don't use it. Everyone else fucking uses it.
It's like, you just talk to your family in Mexico who's also fucking transphobic. So of course they're not going to use it. Like, like, and it's funny. Well, it's not funny, but it's like, it's interesting to me because if they actually talk to like Latin American radicals, a lot of them, their like use of gender neutral language like runs circles, right? Like, mm-hmm. they change so much, like sometimes to the X, sometimes to an E instead of a O or an A, and the language just becomes sometimes like to a whole other level, right? So
mm-hmm.
it's just interesting to see what not having like an international perspective, the limited view it gives you of even language, things like language and inclusivity,
and right? just I don't even know what to call it. There's like a lot of like my feminist framework around anything, I guess a lot of it is like influenced by like feminists in Mexico because they're so like, I don't want to call them radicals, it's just like their thoughts and like their thoughts and views and like work around a lot of things, like particularly motherhood and like children, is like something that I always like try to talk about here. And like their framework is already like, they already have like a bunch of work around like what it means like to not hate children, like very basic shit that I try to talk about here. Like, they have like a whole like work surrounding it, you know, that's not even like this radical thing over there. It just is. It's like incorporated into like their feminist like movements and like framework. And so a lot, like, yeah, like that's just to say like we could learn a lot and like not just like take from them, but like from each other. You know what I mean? If we actually like had like solidarity with like people outside of the U.S. And like, it's hard to even say like outside the U.S. because a lot of us don't have solidarity with each other here. You know, a lot of it is because like, for example, like when we're talking about like non-Black Latinx, like we're anti-Black as fuck. So how are we even going to build solidarity with Black people? But just like solidarity in general, it's like a, and I don't know if it's just like this capitalist thing, because I mean, capitalism also exists outside of the US, obviously, but I don't know if it's just like an American thing where we're so like self-centered that we can't kind of look past, like, you know, I'm not even going to get into the coronavirus shit right now. But that's just like the fucking obvious with like this pandemic that's happening. Because yeah, oh again and again, we're talking about our government and how they fucked up. But at the end of the day, like some of you bitches are selfish as fuck. Like, period. You know? So
something. Sorry, I'm just like you bringing up like how tying in like not being in solidarity with one another to the coronavirus. Reminds me of how at the beginning of the pandemic, folks were like, nobody deserves you, nobody owes you a check-in. Handle this on your own. Like,
oh my God.
We're all,
I remember those posts. Yeah, I'm like.
And they were going like wildfire. People were like latching on to them like, yeah, fuck you. I'm like doing this shit on my own.
Like the, I don't want to say the leftist crowd, but yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Even the leftist crowd was like, yeah.
They were saying that they were doing something with that. And I'm just like.
I'm just like, so you're saying that community doesn't matter to you, like, at all. Like, so what the fuck?
Yeah, like, it's a pandemic. Everyone for, what is it? Like, to each their own, like, everyone for themselves, pretty much. This is what everyone was saying at the beginning of the pandemic. Like, this is so hard, bitch. Like, I'm not going to call you. Like, fuck off. I don't give a shit.
Everybody put their aim away messages. Like, I'm sorry. I'm dealing with the pandemic. You can't reach me right now. And then put, like, my cam lyrics.
If you, and then... I can't.
Like, in case folks were like, I have to take care of my mental health first. Like, yeah, that's fucking valid.
Yeah,
like,
obviously.
Take care of like yours.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that, like, that's what they were, like, trying. That's what they thought they were saying. Like, you know, some people, like, I don't have time to, like, reach out to you, Ruben. You know what I mean? Because I'm taking care of my own mental health during this pandemic. And, like, to some extent, like, yes, like, for me personally, like, I have a lot of shit going on, you know, during this pandemic with my child, but like, that doesn't mean I'm like, fuck off, Ruben. Like, I don't give a shit about you. Like, I'm, you know, I don't care. It's just like, see y'all are whack as fuck, but COVID. Then, yeah. See you on like, see you in 2020 when at 23 and shit. But it's like the same people that I saw sharing stuff like that were like the same people that like in on other posts were like trying to say shit about community. Which also reminds me, like, during the pandemic, and I think I had posted about it, it was, like, you know, like, on Twitter, someone was, like, oh, parents, you know, like, how can we help you during this pandemic, and, like, I had replied, and, like, other parents were just, like, you know, like, if you can, like, buy groceries or do laundry, like, or bring us food, right, like, so I don't have to cook, you know, whatever, and then all these, like, people, and it's also because, like, you know, a lot of them, we go back to, like, hating children, but a lot of them were just, like, oh, I, just because I don't have children doesn't mean I'm not busy, and, like, they chose to have children, and, like, why, and I'm, like, these are the same people that, like, are always talking about community, but, like, all of a sudden, like, that goes out the window when we're talking about, like, parents and families, like, all of a sudden, you know, you're, like, fuck out of here, like, you're on your own, so, yeah, so a lot of people that throw the word, like, community around are just kind of, like, self-serving themselves, and they don't, it's, like, people don't really, like, I don't know, like, I had brought this up in, like, with, like, just people that I organize with at one thing. Like, I really want to get to them down to, like, what is community? Like, what do we think of, or, like, what is it? Like, the very basic shit, because a lot of us, and, like, maybe I've done it too, right? Like, at one point or another, it's community one day, and then the other day, it's, like, fuck off. You know what I mean? And it's like mutual aid one day, and then the other day it's like, fuck off, parents, like you chose to have kids. You know what I mean? So it's like, what is community, and like, what does it look like, and what should, you know, what does it mean to be in a community with someone else? You know what I mean?
And do they have the same definition of community as you do? Right? Because yeah, by because, you know, this pandemic has shown us that we all have obviously have different definitions of this. Otherwise, people wouldn't be like, see you on the other side of COVID. Like, wouldn't be something that crosses people's mind. And so I think people need to realize that they're embodying a dissonance that is not congruent, that can't exist, right? Like,
it's like community, like,
community only benefits me and not community.
Like, I want to say it's somehow tied to capitalism in this weird way. It has to be.
It's not a weird way. It's a very obvious way. It's individualism, right?
Individualism, yeah. Which is like still kind of like this capitalist. It's just whack to me. But maybe that's just like homework, you know? To sit there and think about what you think of, what you think community is, and how you've done these things that we're talking about. Maybe you've thought that was like a good post to share back in March. And, you know, it's fine. I bet that back in March you thought that was a good post to share. But now, like, hopefully, like, we can reflect on why that was a bad post. And, like, I don't know, just, like, be better about community and what it means. And, like, have, like, a good definition, like, a solid definition of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's legit.
I don't know what time, like, we're supposed to talk to.
They just basically were, like, run until the wheels fall off and then do the Q&A. But we're at a good time. Did you want to go to the Q&A or did you just want to keep talking shit?
I don't know. I think, like, we talked about everything that we had.
Yeah, we did.
Said we were going to talk about. Where are the questions? Can you see them?
Yeah, I can
see. Are they in the chat? Oh, okay. So
there's a little questions? Q&A button down there. Yeah. I am, like, afraid to open them because I know some of them came out early.
Okay. Someone wrote a paragraph.
Somebody just
said, I mean, we can read some of them, and then if we think of something else answers. That we forgot, we can.
Yeah, do. Sorry, just testing. How do I answer this? Answer live. Somebody said, Joe Biden, shake my damn head. Somebody else said, did it
shake my hot dog?
Shake my hot dog?
That's what I thought SMH used to mean before.
Did it seem like a joke to him? Wow, I have secondhand embarrassment. Yeah, I like, actually, I was talking to Cassandra yesterday about how, like, I'm embarrassed for him. Like, for Joe Biden, for thinking that was a thing that he could
do. It was embarrassing. It took me a while to watch the video.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, if somebody left a paragraph, let me click. Okay, let me get through to the short ones. Somebody said, I love Cassandra and Ruben. Y'all stay calling out hypocrites. Where can people find the rest of your podcast episodes? You know, just type in Bitter Brown Fams wherever you get podcasts. Apple.
Yeah, so that's on Spotify, iTunes, Instagram. It'll take you to our.
Yeah, Stitcher. iHeartRadio.
Not to be a bitch.
Google Live.
You can Google it and then, like, it'll come up.
Google's Google Play, literally everywhere. Like, we are everywhere. Yeah. Just type in Bitter Brown Fams wherever you get podcasts and we pop up. Our Wednesday at 6 p.m. usually have your podcast. No, we don't have, like, a set time.
I think they think maybe this is, like, how we record.
Oh, no. This isn't. We don't do it in public. Okay, so somebody said, hey, I'm actually from Osceola, Georgia, and the local Latinx communities are already going on tirades about, what about us? Why aren't there protests for us in order to bring down the Black Lives Matter movement, just like they did for Vanessa Guillen a few months back? How should I approach that? I have a feeling this will become more common. This has been common for a while now, but yeah. Also, there's already a Facebook pages and fundraisers being organized in support of the doctor because she's the main OBGYN in the area. Wait, what doc? He's
who, the who doctor? Who created the fundraiser? Like, at the same racist time, people? Apparently. Or?
So the doc, damn. He's the main OBGYN. And at the same time, local members of the community are coming forward with their own stories of mistreatment from the same doctor, most of them immigrants. Also, the local media is not reporting this at all and are blocking people, calling them out on social media. I hope this helps provide some extra context for everyone since it is far from Texas or California.
So yeah. A few things about, thank you for sharing with with us. So
Maria Velasquez.
I've been seeing, you know, people just posting about what's going on in ICE. And it's interesting that you say that, because there's, in one of these posts, it had a lot of comments, and it was pretty much just like, how come no one's really talking about, you know, what's happening in ICE? And there was a lot of white women in the comment section that were like, this is my OBGYN. Like, a lot of them. It was really interesting. And they were like, and then people were like, oh, like, did he ever, you know, like, do something to you? And they were like, no. Like, they were just kind of like, it seemed like they were kind of concerned for this man. Apparently he's not a white man. From what I heard, I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. But it's interesting that you say that he has also cases of abuse outside of ICE, particularly with other immigrant women, because if white women are on Facebook saying, like, you know, he's great, this is my OBGYN, and then you have, like, immigrant women, like brown women, black women, that he's doing this shit to, it's obviously, I mean, not that we already didn't know it was racist as shit, but, you know, just very telling. And I haven't actually seen any non-Black Latinx talk about, like, what is it called? Like, what about us bullshit in regards to this yet? Have you, Ruben?
I haven't, but they but are I mean, saying I, that it's happening in their area. So,
yeah, because I'm sure, I mean, like, they're...
Yeah,
they're going to do that because that's what they do, you know, with, like, the children. And, like, of course, they're going to erase the fact that Black women, I had shared a story, actually, one of the women, her name's Pauline, she's in the ICE detention in Georgia, and she was scheduled to be deported. They actually stopped the deportation today, but she was going to be deported back to Cameroon, I believe that's how you say it. And she also involuntarily got her tubes tied through that OBGYN, and she's a Black immigrant. And so one thing, you know, obviously it's just like, we don't know who these, we don't know who exactly these women are. We don't know if they're all from Central America. We don't know if they're all, you know what I mean? We don't know their nationalities or ethnicities, like, but we do know that primarily they're going to be like Indigenous brown and Black women. But of course the non-Black Latinx people are going to try to just make it a Mexican issue, and then two, just like a non-Black immigrant issue, which I think is just important to highlight that there's also Black people obviously in detentions, and they get deported at higher rates and also face abuse at higher rates than non-Black people in detention. So that's like one way I feel like we could include that in those narratives that we're going to see. That we see all the time.
So confronting Latinx, non-Black Latinx community members, family members, when they bring up like, what about us rhetoric, is to bring up, you know, you are like, Black Latinxes are included in Black Lives Matter movements, right? Not only that, but when we talk about detention centers, right? Black people are deported at higher, disproportionate rates, right? Than other racial groups. So breaking down those subjects to them, breaking down also that the competition here, the whatever fucking competition they have in their heads, is not between marginalized groups here. Like, we're fighting white supremacy, right? We're not like the reason that maybe non-black issues from non-black folks who are also marginalized don't gain as much traction is because a lot of times we are not as organized. Like, straight up, like we try to piggyback off of Black organizers instead of building our own foundations, right? When they ask those things again, ask them, what organization are you connected to, or have you connected with to, you know, to bring this to national attention? And if they can't answer that, then, you know, point out that that's part of why, you know, things that have not taken off, point out that then if they are not doing the work, then they have no say in this essentially, but to get to it, to get to fucking work, right? A lot of us want the easy way out. And we think that, and we, I mean, non-Black people, we think that just because Black issues get national attention, that suddenly things will be solved for them, right? Meanwhile, like the rates of, extrajudicial killings of Black people haven't gone down, even in a fucking pandemic. And I've broken this down before, but that means that cops are actually being more violent because there are less people walking around. That means that they have to go out of their way to target more Black people, right? So just because Black issues are in the mainstream doesn't mean that somehow shit is getting fixed. And for a lot of us non-Black people, our duty is to not only uplift these issues, but also to combat when resentment arises in our communities, right? And ask our own community, where's the work that we're putting in? And keep pushing our community until they have an answer for that. That doesn't rely on becoming part of the problem and doesn't rely on furthering anti-Blackness, because sometimes our movements lead to that as well. And I'm looking at you, Chicano movement. Like,
Black, right? Who are you looking at?
You're part of the problem, bitch.
Oh, me, yeah. let's see.
Next question.
How do you sustain the momentum of educating folks? Do you find that there are times when it is difficult to do so?
Every day.
Yeah, every fucking day.
And that's like not a joke.
Nah, that's not a joke. Hold on, wait, go back to it.
I don't know how to.
Where did it go?
I pushed it as answer. How do you find sustainability and education? Do you find that there are times when it's difficult to do so?
Yeah, I mean, all the time, but especially like when it comes with like harassment or also, I mean, not just when there's like harassment for sure. And we're talking about like the harassment where it like goes on for a few days, because I get trolls like every day. It's not like, you know, but when it's like a specific kind of harassment where like they target you, but also just like with shit going on in my personal life, and I'm sure Ruben is the same. Like, I think a lot of people think, you know, like I think one of my posts recently, someone was like, said something, you know, cause I'm always like, people need to do work. Right. And like, I know when people hear that, they assume a lot of things, like I'm telling you to go and chain yourself to like an ice van and like something very drastic like that, when we're like talking about like whatever capacity that you have to, right? And we talk about this on our episodes, but they were like, oh well, this is your job, you know, like my platform is my job, and so like you can like do this work. And I'm like, this isn't my job, like this platform like is not my job. Like I'm right now I'm not working because of the pandemic, but if like the pandemic wasn't happening, like I'm like a working class person, like I'm a single mom, like I have a life just like everyone else, and I'm trying to survive under capitalism like everyone else on top of like other shit going on in my life. But that's like sometimes like I don't have the capacity to like educate people, like to post, and so like sometimes I just deactivate, sometimes I don't engage. So it's just like a lot of things, and that's always been like one of my struggles, I think, is like people kind of seeing you as like not an actual person behind the screen. You're just kind of there like putting information out, and like they think they can just like feed off of you, and they don't give a shit like if you have money, you know, to fucking eat. They're just kind of like, educate me, or like fuck you, and like just coming at you like all from everywhere. And then at the end of the day, like it's just like kind of like people are consuming you, but they don't, at the end of the day, they don't care like if my mental health is okay. Like they don't care if I have a job or like I lost my job or like I have money. It's just kind of like, yeah, it's hard to have a platform. It's hard to like constantly like read like these traumatic things and then post about them and then also deal with harassment and then also deal with like backlash on that. So
yeah, it's difficult when people want easy education. And like when the Black Lives Matter movement took off again over the summer, everybody wanted a reading list. Everybody wanted a reading list. And they were so about this, like, you know, racial equality reading list. And it's like, how many of you bitches like read any of those books that activists were suggesting you read? And like, what was the purpose of you demand? Like, every post that I made, they were like, what books do you think we should read to get through the moment? And emails, so many fucking emails demanding reading lists. And for me, it was like, you're not going to get you know, like, there's no amount of reading that's gonna, you know, close this gap that organizing and being part of community can, you know, close, right? Like, when we talk about, like, our praxis, you know, you, Cassandra, me, like, we've been folks who have been on different levels of organizing for more than a decade now, right? Like, I was 19, 20, and, you know, trying to find how to, running in harm reduction groups. And I was 22, 23, like, now I'm 31, by the way. Like, so this is, I know I look young, but, like, this is ages ago, right? Like, I was 23. You know, I was in my early mid-20s, like, camping out outside of banks, right, and shit like that. Like, and our activism has grown as and changed, right? Like, now I'm more of an educator, and now I dedicate more time to media analysis and educational content. But all that is to say that, like, reading lists are not gonna, like, close that gap if you're not doing the work, right? It's like having theory with no practice, right? So, but a lot of people want easy answers to these difficult solutions. Like, whenever I post about, like, abolishing the police, they're like, what do you want to do about, like, rapists or blah, blah, blah? And I'm just like, well, as a survivor, one of the things that helped me, you know, was these, these action plans. And if you, but if you really cared, here's these tombs, like these giant, like, works that talk about what restorative justice, what, abolition means when it comes to these types of heinous crimes, right? But folks don't want to put in all that work. They want the easy, quick answer. And so that's really difficult for me. It's also difficult when folks want those easy, like, race facts or easy, like, social justice bullet points, but, like, ignore, like, the rest of the work, right? Like, I'm sure there's a a big percentage of Cassandra's 100,000 plus followers who are like, you have a podcast every single time Cassandra posts about a new episode, right? And it's because people, for example, see her as this dispensary of political action as opposed to someone who puts in labor to put in critical thought into the world, right? And who has already answered a lot of the questions that folks regularly ask her about things like abolition, restorative justice, and Latinidad, right? So I think those things are very, they can get, they can weigh us down all the time. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your positive, what are positive challenges of doing podcasts? What are lessons you learned along the way of creating a podcast? I think being away from each other can be difficult. We're in different time zones, right? And we both have busy lives, and Cassandra's a mother. So there's, like, a lot of things that we have to get in order before we even get to sit down and, like, breathe and, like, talk about the issues after we've already talked about the issues all day long, like, in our work, in our organizing, in our daily lives. So that, I think, it can be difficult. Also, like, everything, like, I learned how to use Photoshop and Audacity, and, you know, I learned how to code websites, and I learned a lot of different skills to put this out there, because this is, like, hella DIY, like, OG punk. Like we are doing this on our own, 100%.
Yeah. That's a challenge would be, we don't even live in the same state. We see each other like a few times a year. and I think it would be easier, obviously, if me and Ruben lived in the same space, not only because we would probably be able to record together, or we would just be able to, like, see each other and, like, kind of build. Right, like, when we talk, it's kind of like when we have time, and it's usually, like, right before we're about to record. So that's like a challenge, but I think like the positive is, yeah, that it has, even though like DIY in it has also been challenging, it's also like a positive because it's like been from ourselves and not like influenced by, I guess, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I don't know, like if there was like a third party like involved or like, I don't know how to explain it. But yeah, I don't know. I think just like that we have control over like what we talk about without someone restricting what we say or like how we say it.
Like a commercial.
Like a sponsor or something like that. Yeah.
Our sponsors are our patrons. So thank you, patrons.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for real.
On patreon.com/bitterbrownfems.
Okay, next question.
They want to get knuckles tattoos. The jaws hurt. I realize that we both have tattoos.
I forget that you have that.
Me too.
I'm like, see that from here?
I'm not going to comment to my knuckle tattoo because I don't remember it.
No, it didn't hurt. It was my first tattoo, and I was really scared. Like, very scared.
My and back tattoo like, hurt.
Oh. Yeah, and I was like, oh. It didn't. I mean, it wasn't like, I wasn't like, oh, yeah, this feels great. But it didn't, like, it was, you know, no, it didn't hurt. I say go for it.
You know, I got a tattoo on my lonja. That one fucking hurt. Oh, my God. That one hurt so bad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, Ruben and Cassandra. My name is Marianne. I'm a student at the University of Colorado. I listen to your podcast weekly as part of a school assignment. Okay. That's kind of cool. Not really a question, but I'm glad that I found your podcast because I'm a regular listener now for sure. Oh, that's sweet. I would like to know what class that's for. And like, I hate thinking like people are like, you know, when like people are doing write-ups to listen to our shit or like even go to our talks, and it's like people who don't know like who we are, and they're just like, why?
What was that?
Why do I have to listen to this?
Well, imagine, I don't think that many people came here under that situation because like our viewership didn't really drop. It was like 79-85 the whole time. But there's been like, I forgot what was the talk where we were like, just
Fuck
like,
Ted Cruz?
Like straight that up, line? Like just like rammed into the radical politics, and somebody was like taking notes, like,
oh yeah, yeah, like, that was like in LA, and there was like these people with like their laptops like front row like taking notes while we're talking, and it was really funny because I'm like, they're probably like, yes, fuck Ted Cruz. like I wonder what kind of notes they're taking, you know.
I thought I was here for Latino empowerment.
Go ahead, Ruben, if you want to read that. Let me see. Can you expand more on your frame of bitterness as a necessary expression, and how have you sustained your own fire for critique, especially when it reaches our own communities?
Oh, that's a good one.
I don't understand the last part. How have you sustained your own fire for critique?
Like how have we just like not stopped being bitter in like 3 years of having this podcast?
It's like, it's always, how can you not be bitter is the question. Like, especially, like, for me, personally, like, as a, you know, like, a brown working class woman, like, living under capitalism and, like, all this, like, violence, like, how would I not be fucking bitter when men exist?
I think.
Like, how is that, how are you happy right now?
You gotta find the positivity and silver linings in all
of
your work.
No, but I think that, you know, and me and Ruben talked about numerous times about what Bitter Brown Femmes means, and specifically bitter. So I don't want to take up like too much time on that, but it's very much like also just rooted in like reclaiming bitter and anger as like someone who's always like, it's always like assumed of me that I'm always like angry or bitter whenever I critique something, but also like owning that I am fucking bitter and I am fucking angry, and like that's also like fucking valid and powerful, and for me personally is like what keeps like me going, because if I don't want to say that love isn't necessary, or like I don't know if love or like any other like thing that we equate to being positive, because those things are also important, but I also feel that it's just like, it's like what fuels me personally. It reminds me of like that tweet by Cher that's like, aren't you all tired of being mad? And she's like, hate wakes me up. Like, that's me. Like, I feel like I'm just like an angry person, but I feel like it's valid anger. And like, people often try to tell you that it's not, as a silencing tactic, as a respectability tactic, as a like put you in your place. And like, it's kind of like a resistance to that and like reclaiming it like and on my own, you know, instead of it like being also like placed on me for no fucking reason. Cause that's like what people do online all the time. They're like, why are you so mad? And I'm like, yeah, I literally said to stop being racist. Like, I don't, like, I'm not even mad right now. You know?
Yeah. That's another thing too. It's like, stop being like, one of the things about like us reclaiming bitter, it's that like a lot of times people throw it at us like, you sound so bitter, and it's like, all I told you was to stop being racist. Like, why do you think that talking about racism is a negative emotion, right? It's like the fact that it exists is a negative thing, right? But because we're also so accustomed to like, you know, all these spaces being like, cut out talks people who don't give you good energy, like all those type of like, you know, those positive feeling sites, that, you know,
toxic like, positivity,
toxic, yeah, toxic positivity, like that,
like those PMA bitches, and they're like, you know, what's that, right? They're like PMA, like positive mental, what is it, attitude, positive, yeah, mental attitude, and they're kind of just like, look at the good, and just like feed you all this like positive bullshit that's really much just like you blocking fucking everything else. I just hate those bitches. If you listen to our podcast, if you go on our platforms, it's negative energy 24/7. Bad vibes.
Bad vibes only. No,
you know, like that meme that's like, I'm gonna make this environment so toxic. That's like us when we created Better Brown Femmes.
I'm gonna cause problems on purpose. no, but I think for me, something that keeps me going is the fact that like shit is still the same. And a lot of the times it's one of the things that keeps up this like momentum for me is that the fact that we keep coming to the same conversations because people are resistant to growing and to combating each other. I think a lot of times we fear, for example, confronting our families about everything we talk about because we're afraid of losing the family unit, right? For example. And to me, that's never really been, I've lost a family unit before. For me, fighting for what I believe in is more important than being at peace with folks. Because if I am feeling at peace, oftentimes, specifically as a non-Black person, that means that somebody else out there is not at peace, right? If, for example, I don't confront my family's transphobia because I want to keep the peace, what that translates to is that then they're going to go be transphobic out in the world and enact violence against somebody else, right? My peace should never come at the expense of somebody else. And I think that living on this, not being afraid to be angry has helped me confront a lot of my community, confront myself above all, right? Like, because we've been talking about shit, and often Cassandra and I come from a place of like, these are a lot of things that we had to challenge within ourselves, right? And a lot of things that we had to grow from. And so I think that because the work isn't done is why I keep sounding angry to folks or come from a place of like justified rage, right? Which, by the way, like, y'all need angry bitches like us, because when it comes to the protests and shit like that, all you kumbaya motherfuckers, like, y'all not the ones throwing down. So like, we're necessary part of the quote-unquote revolution, and other bitter folks are as well, right?
Yeah. And at the end of the day, also, like, being angry, bitter, having rage, whatever the fuck you want to call it, is still rooted in love. For me, because if I didn't give a shit about not just myself or my child, but like my community or literally any other marginalized person, like I wouldn't be angry. I wouldn't give shit. Like, I would, you know, be content with my own life and only focus on myself. So being angry and like being bitter is still like rooted in like community or love, or like you caring for other people, because like,
and also like that said, like at the end of the day, like we also understand that you cannot hate your enemy more than you love your people, right? So we also come back to a place of like, this anger is, yes, we're angry at the systems, but we're angry at them because they mistreat our communities, right? So ultimately, this anger is rooted in love, right? To be mushy about it, right? But you can't have just love without action. It doesn't often, sometimes it doesn't lead to much. And I think that particularly in Latinx communities,
love does not trump hate.
Yeah, right? Love without action does not trump hate.
It doesn't. I'm sorry they lied to you in 2016.
Oh, God. That was such a rough couple of months after that. I'm just remembering all the soft protests. Like, there was, like, dance protests and, like, holding hand protests. And it's like, love trumps hate. I'm like, what? There was one where they were, like, holding hands around the river in Oakland. And one of my friends was like, let's push them on to the...
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Well, I guess that's like...
Want to kick us out. Yeah. And then some...
So, maybe you want to answer one more?
Yeah, somebody asked what items we use. We use Blue Yetis to record. And we use Audacity as well as the free software to record. And I think a lot of everything else was like kudos for, and like a lot of love. So thank you for all the love. I know there was somebody who took a test at the same time. Yeah.
Sorry if we didn't get around to your question, but thank you all for the questions and comments.
That was phenomenal, y'all. Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for joining us and the Bitterbound Friends. Thank you again to California State University Entertainment Alliance for their generous support. If you'd like to support future programs like these, please make a gift at donate.cscmb.edu/oc3. This Friday, we will be having Cafecito con Sherry from 10 to 11. Sign up at cscmb.edu/cafecito.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, y'all. Thank you for being here. And somebody was taking a test while this was going on. Y'all were giving us so much love.
Before we leave, I want to give a sincere shout out to all of our patrons on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams, particularly our I Know Her level patrons, Abigail, Araña, Ames, Alana, Amanda, Amy, Angel H, Bianca, Brenda C, Cassandra G, Sandy, Clara, Chrissy, Cynthia, Eveline, Gianna, Griselda, Jacqueline, Jason, Gemma, Jen, Jocelyn, Joel, Karina, Kimberly, Laura, Laila, Linda, Lisbeth, Lucio, Magdalena, Marisol, Miguel, Montse, Monica, Nancy, Ronnie, Sara, Valentina, Vanessa, Vanessa A, Vincent C, Yasmin, and Yulisa. Without y'all's support, we would definitely not have this podcast. So thank y'all so freaking much for your continued patronage. And if you want to help us stay alive, feel free to support us on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams. All right. Thank you for listening to us again. Bye.